Now, Larry Nassar, former doctor for Michigan State University and the U.S. gymnastics team, has been given decades-long prison sentences after pleading guilty to multiple counts of sexually abusing young athletes during medical treatments. Here's Judge Rosemary Aquilina talking to Nassar at his sentencing last week.
As much as it was my honor and privilege to hear the sister survivors, it is my honor and privilege to sentence you. Because, sir, you do not deserve to walk outside of a prison ever again.
Nearly 260 girls and women have reported that Nassar abused them, and many of them gave victim statements at his sentencing hearings. But for over 20 years, allegations of Nassar's abuse were brushed off by the U.S. Gymnastics Organization, Michigan State, and law enforcement. Has many people turning their attention to the sport as a whole, pushing for changes that will make it safer and more accountable to young athletes. Jennifer Say was the 1986 U.S. Gymnastics champion, and she's the author of Chalked Up, My Life in Elite Gymnastics. Jennifer, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
In writing and talking about this, Jennifer, you've been making the case that this is not a problem with one doctor who did a lot of horrible things. You see a much wider institutional problem. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And in saying that we don't have a one-guy problem, which I've been saying, that is not at all minimizing how horrible this one guy is, because it was beyond my wildest imagination, and I imagined things that were pretty bad and experienced things to be pretty bad. But, you know, the point I've been making pretty publicly since my book came out in 2008, so that's 10 years ago, is that there is a widespread culture of abuse in the sport. And in fact, abuse of all varieties, emotional, physical, and as we're seeing now, sexual, is so widespread that it's almost invisible. You almost don't see it. And when there's a culture created where these young athletes, and they are very young in many instances, you know, I walked into a gym for the first time when I was 6 years old, and I was training, you know, nearly 30, 40 hours a week by the time I was 10. When you have a situation where obedience, blind obedience is expected, and abuse is just part of the culture, and when I say abuse, I mean things like, you know, the rate of eating disorders is incredibly high in the sport. These kids are weighed many times a day. They're told they're fat when they're hungry. They train on broken bones and injuries. They're told they're lazy if they're not willing to get back out there. And so you learn not to trust your own perception of the world when that's the environment you're growing up in at a very young age. And so when someone like Nassar comes along and perpetrates these vile crimes, he can say to these young children, you're not uncomfortable. This is a medical treatment. And the child already does not trust her own perception of the world. So she's much more likely to be convinced and to at least try to believe him. So, you know, when I say that this culture, it was almost inevitable that something this horrific was going to happen when you have a culture that requires such blind obedience and where abuse is so widespread.
I want to give a listen to Rachel Den Hollander, one of the first women to go public with the abuse she suffered, talking about these wider problems after Nassar's sentencing.
We would not be here had the adults in authority done what they should have done 20 years ago. We have taken care of one perpetrator. We have not taken care of the systems that allowed him to flourish for 20 years.
And as we heard from victims of Nassar, as you wrote about in your own book, people are not encouraged to come forward with problems. When people come forward with accusations, there's a very hostile response, a very angry response, not at the perpetrator, but the person raising the problem.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. And I think, you know, I mentioned it's a culture of obedience and a culture of abuse. It's also a culture of money and medals. And these institutions, MSU, the USAG, and the USOC, protected their reputations, and that took precedence over the protection of these young athletes, who are children, let's not forget, they are children. And they were making money off of this notion that we had these hardworking American young athletes who were dedicated and motivated on their own, and we were different than those Eastern Bloc countries who built champions, world champions, with abusive tactics. We were different than that. We did it the right way. That was the image we presented. We presented the image that we could win and do it all the right way. And that was a lie at the end of the day. But that's the image we presented that enabled us to bring in sponsors and money. And so the medals were absolutely critical. It was critical to keep winning those medals, but it was also critical to maintain that ideal that we were doing this with our values intact. And so, you know, any expression or reporting of any of these, you know, horrific facts, that person was then discredited. And, you know, I experienced that myself. I was not a victim of Nassar, but wrote a book in 2008, was absolutely discredited and called a liar and an opportunist. And after me, Dominique Moceanu, who was a 1996 gold medalist, wrote a book that was very critical of the Carolis, who were running the national program for many, many years, and many believe were complicit in this Nassar situation. She was also discredited. So different woman, same playbook. We were all discredited because it interfered with that image that was so necessary to present.
Talking to Jennifer Say, 1986 U.S. gymnastics champion, author of the book Chalked Up, My Life in Elite Gymnastics, talking about the Larry Nassar case, sentencing this week, and wider issues of abuse in gymnastics, betrayal of trust in many ways, and accountability. Jennifer, what has to happen to save, I guess, the sport, but more importantly, the athletes, the kids who are going into gymnastics? What needs to happen to make sure these things don't happen?
Well, I mean, a lot has changed in the last few months, really, right? So the broader cultural context of Me Too has happened. So we're all inclined now to listen. Secondly, as it pertains to the Nassar case in particular, based on the victim impact statements in Lansing, 156 women spoke there, and then more in Eaton County, we truly came to understand the depth of the emotional harm that was experienced by these women, and that is prompting the demand for change. I think the first thing we have to do is just recognize that a dramatic cultural shift is required. We need to set a new vision for this organization. Culture change is really hard. You can't just make a quick declaration. This has been the culture for decades. You know, as I've said, this has gone back, this culture of abuse, till when I can remember it back into the early mid-70s when I started the sport. So, you know, we're talking about four decades, if not more. This is going to be incredibly hard work. But the first thing we need to do is recognize that a dramatic culture shift is possible. We need the Safe Sport Act to pass. This is the bill that Dianne Feinstein brought forward, which criminalizes non-reporting. You know, believe it or not, a coach, a gym owner, a member of USA Gymnastics has not been and is not still required to report suspected abuse. They are not mandatory reporters like teachers and social workers and pediatricians. This is the primary feature of the Safe Sport Act, and that we need that to pass. But again, that's not going to drive the broader cultural change. We need the USOC and the USAG to do that, and they need new rules and protocols put in place. They need to, again, reinforce this mandatory reporting. They need to establish a database of complaints about coaches, so when a gym is about to hire a coach, they can check and see if there's been problems in the past. They need a hotline to report abuse. And almost most importantly, I would say there needs to be significant education of coaches. Right now, there's really no requirement for a coach. They don't have any sort of child safety training. There's really nothing of any significance. You need more training to become a yoga teacher or to become a Girl Scout leader. There needs to be education around child safety for coaches. And the kids and the parents also need education about what is okay, what is not okay, in terms of questionable behaviors, emotional, physical, as well as sexual abuse. And that needs to be ongoing education, and that needs to be a program that is enacted by the USAG in all member clubs. And those clubs need to adhere to that, or they will no longer be members.
It sounds like another change from how you were talking about coaching is there's almost this mentality that the coach is God. I mean, the kid doesn't question the coach. The parents can't question the coach. Whatever they do, however harsh it seems, it's for the good of the athlete, is the attitude. Is that something that needs to change?
That's absolutely correct, and that's the culture change I'm talking about. You really feel that you can't question the coach or you'll be punished. You won't be on the team. You won't get the spot that you want. You won't get the extra training hours. You won't. There's a whole host of things. And, you know, you can enter the sport as sort of a relatively normal person with a ton of perspective, but a little bit of talent and a little bit of opportunity, and you can easily get sucked into this vortex of this very abusive and destructive environment. I think the best parents in the world get sucked into it. And, you know, it's important to remember that the parents were prevented from even being in the gyms, and they weren't allowed at these training camps, so they weren't even really seeing what was going on. Now, yes, as a parent, I would question why I wasn't allowed to be there, but the kids were then, you know, trained to be very obedient, and they wouldn't go home and tell their parents what was happening. And everyone essentially is afraid to rock the boat because they don't want their child to miss out on this opportunity.
We're talking to Jennifer Say, author and former U.S. gymnastics champion, about what can change in sports organizations, gymnastics in particular, to prevent the abuse of young athletes. This after the sentencing of the doctor who had committed years, Larry Nassar, of cases of abuse against young athletes. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think needs to change in sports, in gymnastics, in the people who run these organizations and coaches? If you're the parent of an athlete or an athlete yourself, what conversations are you having now about these topics? If you're a coach, what needs to change for you and your colleagues? And if you are a gymnast or have been yourself, we'd love to hear from you. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk now with Jennifer Say, author of Chalked Up, My Life in Elite Gymnastics. She's a former U.S. gymnastics champion. But what needs to change in sports to protect young athletes from abuse? And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been watching this Larry Nassar case progress? He was sentenced to decades in prison, multiple sentences of decades in prison for years and years of abuse of young athletes in his care. How do you think amateur sports can be more responsive to allegations of abuse when they come up? If you've been an athlete yourself, did you see things that could have been done differently to respond to inappropriate behavior? Do we need to change the culture around competition and coaching and winning? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You were talking earlier, Jennifer, about reporting of incidents of abuse. And thanks to the reporting from the Indianapolis Star, which really cracked a lot of this story open.
Yep.
There were cases where, a gym owner might call the National Gymnastics Group and say, hey, there's this coach, he's bragging about abusing kids potentially. I want to report that to you. And they didn't take that seriously. They said, well, if it isn't a signed complaint from an athlete or their parents, it's unverified. We're not going to pursue it. Is that right?
That is correct. The first piece printed in the Indy Star was about the chronic mishandling of cases of abuse. When they were reported to the USAG, they were dismissed, discouraged, and ultimately these complaints were, you know, sort of buried in a drawer somewhere. And there were tens of reports. I mean, the numbers were, I believe, in the 50s or 60s. So there was just this constant discouragement. And again, that's part of that culture of obedience and that protection of reputation above all else, reputation of the sport, of the club. And if you are an organization that takes athlete and child safety and child welfare seriously and makes that your number one priority, this would never have happened. They would have taken those reports seriously. They would have reported them to the authorities. They've proven themselves incapable of doing so, and that is why the Feinstein Act needs to pass.
Let's talk about personnel changes. People at the top have left the organization. Do you think a lot more people need to leave who are at some stage in this complicit or covering up cases of abuse?
Yeah, I suspect so, and there will be independent investigations both at MSU and I think USAG as well. Yes, the board has all resigned under pressure from the USOC, and the president and CEO resigned quite a while back at this point. But, I think there were plenty of people within the organization doing his bidding, and that needs to be looked at. People have asked me and said to me, why didn't these girls speak up? Why didn't they? And what we know now is they did, time and again, 97, 98, 2004, 2014, 2015. They spoke up, they said something, and they were dismissed. And these reports were buried or mishandled or not taken seriously. And anyone who did that needs to be held accountable.
I want to bring on our callers now. Heidi is with us in Wausau. Heidi, hello.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to comment, as being a former gymnast myself, that I really think the sport needs to consider a different type of uniform for gymnasts. I believe that something more modest would be just so beneficial to these young individuals and children who are wearing next to nothing sometimes, and I just think it is not fair to them.
Heidi, thanks for the call. Jennifer, what do you think?
There are people that say that, and I think it certainly has merit. I don't think it's the panacea, and I don't think it necessarily solves the problem, but I see the value in it for sure.
Heidi, thanks for the call. Go next to Tom on the line in Eau Claire. Tom, hi.
Hi. Hey, I'm really agreeing with what your guest is saying here, and it is a cultural change that is needed if we're going to correct these problems. And it's got to start at the elementary, the junior high, and the high school level. We see it all over the country where athletic departments absolutely control a school district. They have that much power. And unfortunately, it only gets worse when an athlete starts thinking about advancing to the collegiate level or the professional or Olympic level. It just grows and grows. And I think to correct the problem, we have to go back to the junior high and the high schools and truly put athletics in their place, which is to be an extracurricular sport. And when you can get it back to that level, then the next thing we have to talk about is you're talking about mandatory reporting. As far as I know, in every state in the country, a school teacher is a mandatory reporter, and coaches are school teachers. They're on the same budget.
Tom, thanks a lot for the call. A lot of that applies to school sports. Jennifer, a lot of what we're talking about in gymnastics doesn't happen in the context of a school district, right? It would be at a club.
That's correct. These private clubs exist outside of the school district. Most, if not all, of these coaches, are not school teachers, have no sort of accreditation in that area. And even if they were teachers, in this particular function as a club coach, they don't have that same sort of accountability. So, that's the problem. I agree with everything the caller said, of course. But the sort of the problem and the dirty little secret, if you will, is that all of this private club network across the country has essentially existed outside of those laws and regulations. It's the perfect haven for a pedophile. Sadly, they can, be around a lot of young children alone, private coaching sessions, as the previous caller said, around athletes that are minimally clothed, and they really don't have any oversight or obligation to child welfare other than what ethics would demand, and we've seen that hasn't really taken precedence.
Go next to Steve on the line in Danbury. Steve, hi.
Hi. The solution to me is the grandfather of four granddaughters, two of whom are in gymnastics. It's fairly simple. Young women need to be believed when they come forward. They do so at great risk to themselves, and not being believed just compounds what is already a very difficult situation.
Steve, thanks a lot for that call. And Jennifer, that what Steve is calling for there is, it sounds like, the opposite of what happened. Kids, teens weren't believed.
That's right. And, as I was saying earlier, a lot has changed. The broader cultural context has changed with the Me Too movement. And it sort of required, dictated, that we listen to women and, in this case, children. And I think the other thing that has changed since we watched the victim impact statements in Lansing is not only we believed them and listened to them, but we truly understood with our hearts the depth of the harm that happened. And so we are now motivated to change. But I will say, you know, this case has been active for a long time, quite a while before Me Too started, and it wasn't generating any headlines. So it is this broader cultural context and that change, I think, that has really brought this to the fore.
Jennifer, very briefly, I mean, are you hoping there's a new generation of coaches, maybe the people who survived this victimization in the first place, who can turn things around for the future?
Yeah, I mean, I love the sport. I grew up doing the sport. I started when I was 6, and I did it till I was 18. There's so much good in it. And if you can sort of view child development and self-esteem building and all of those things through the lens of sport, it's all very positive, but we need to rebuild it from the ground up, and all of those methods of coaching that have been acceptable in the past need to go away. And for all the coaches that are feeling defensive and nervous out there, they need to take a good, long, hard look at how they've been coaching for the last years and decades.
Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jennifer Say, former U.S. gymnastics champion, author of Chalked Up, My Life in Elite Gymnastics. She joined us to talk about the case of former athletic doctor Larry Nassar and how sports organizations can protect young athletes from sexual assault and other forms of abuse.